Madam Lieutenant Governor, Madam President, Mr. Speaker, leaders, justices and judges, legislators, elected officials, distinguished guests, friends, family, fellow Iowans, good morning. It is my honor to stand before you today in this great chamber, in front of this joint session of the Iowa Legislature, to deliver the message: the condition of Iowa is strong. Our strength comes from working together and our joint commitment to prudent choices for a better Iowa. To the new members of the Iowa Legislature who are coming to Des Moines for the first time to serve their constituents back home, welcome. I also want to welcome returning legislators who return to the Capitol after receiving a vote of confidence from your constituents. I'm eager to continue working with you to serve our state. As we return for another legislative session, we return without a military veteran and dedicated public servant, Representative Dwayne Allons, who will be dearly missed in this great chamber. I know now more than ever that the work we do here together matters. It matters in the lives of hardworking Iowa families and our Main Street business. It matters to farmers and farmland. It matters to public safety in our state parks. It matters to Iowa children counting on us to give them a world-class education, who are now benefiting from the phase-in of the most extensive teacher leadership system in the nation. It matters to the veteran completing their tour of duty. Instead of worrying about where they're going to find a career after leaving the service, they're comforted to know that Iowa has thousands of careers available for them right here, now, because of Home Base Iowa. It matters to the hardworking machinists on the line. Rather than thinking that industry had given up on them, they're eager to the opportunity to sharpen their craft and demonstrate their skills through a National Career Readiness Certificate. It matters that we work together. These successes should serve as guideposts for a familiar journey of coming together to help Iowans create more jobs, live better lives, and grow prosperity throughout our state. Ladies and gentlemen, our work together has Iowa on the rise. In the past four years, 168,700 jobs have been created. Iowa's unemployment rate has been slashed by nearly 30%, and over $9 billion in private capital investments have located in Iowa. We passed the largest tax cut in our state's history, which through a close collaboration of the Iowa Department of Revenue and county governments is being implemented throughout the state. We invested historically in our children's future through transformational education reform. And we did it working together. Together. During the 2014 legislative session, we worked across partisan lines to pass historic home-based Iowa package that attracts veterans leaving the military service to come to Iowa to fill high-quality careers available here. Our actions are working. Today, over 600 veterans have been matched with jobs in Iowa through Home-Based Iowa Initiative. 8 cities and counties have become Home-Based Iowa communities, standing ready to embrace veterans and their families as they transition to civilian life. And 8 of our colleges and universities have earned the distinction of Home-Based Iowa Champs for their designation and for the commitment they've made to welcoming service members to their campus. Already, our work together has resulted in 24,000 jobs being posted on the Home-Based Iowa Jobs Bank. Our work to pass Home-Based Iowa is bringing new business to the state as well. This month, I met with one of the owners of Capital Armament Company, a former United States Marine. He informed me that the company is relocating from Minnesota to Sibley, Iowa, in part because of home base Iowa and the friendly business climate that we offer. Simply put, working together, we've ensured that veterans leaving the service have boundless opportunities to live, work, and prosper in Iowa. Our work demonstrates that no veteran should have to worry about finding a job after sacrificing so much for our state and our nation. Our work through the Iowa Apprenticeship and Job Training Program, the Skilled Iowa Initiative, and the National Career Readiness Certificate, among other initiatives, helped hardworking Iowans move forward. Unlike past years, when tuition was raised by over 17%, we worked together to pass a tuition freeze for Iowa students at our region's institutions. Our work has put us on a bright, sustainable path. Our budget is balanced. Our state maintains a budget surplus. Our economic emergency accounts are fully funded, and our unemployment rate is the 10th lowest in the nation. And we've done it together. With our continued progress, we must continue to be mindful of the prudent budgeting that brought us the opportunity to reinvest in our children and to return taxpayers' hard-earned money. Through careful management, we can continue to grow even if we encounter some choppy waters. We must continue following the lead of our fellow Iowans. Like the nearly 40 farmers who came together in Northwest Iowa last October with 8 combines and 6 dump carts and a dozen trucks to help harvest the beans of a fallen friend. The message that rings out today and always in Iowa, together we can. Together we can make our schools safer. We can continue implementing transformational education reform while passing new measures to protect our students from bullying and harassment in schools. Together we can strengthen our rural infrastructure by connecting every acre in Iowa to high-speed internet, better access to broadband means ensuring modern farming methods can flourish in all Iowa fields as part of a modern infrastructure. Strengthening our infrastructure also means we must come together and strengthen the roads and bridges that connect Iowa farmers, schools, and Main Street businesses to the world. We can make college more affordable and accessible for Iowans. We can renew our commitment to providing affordable world-class education at our region's universities by offering select degrees for $10,000 and again freezing tuition for Iowa students. We can provide more assistance to Iowa students with financial needs attending our outstanding independent colleges and universities. Let's continue to invest in our community colleges, including skilled training for Iowa workers. A better trained workforce means better opportunities for Iowa families. Simply put, no position in our state should be left unfilled due to lack of skilled workers. Together, we can make Iowa the most transparent government in the land. We can offer Iowa taxpayers a new transparency portal, making state government more open, accessible, and easier to navigate. Together, we can accomplish this forward-thinking plan of action. We have these opportunities to improve the quality of life in our state because together, we made it possible. In the fall of 2014, Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, my wife Chris, and I had the opportunity to visit Sioux City, Northland, and Marshalltown school districts to discuss the important topic of preventing bullying in Iowa schools. We were pleased to be joined at each stop by students, teachers, parents, school administrators, legislators, and community leaders. What we heard at each school was clear. Students are ready to stand up and say, let's end bullying in Iowa. Now it's our turn. Students in these districts and throughout our state have told their stories of learning being disrupted and feeling unsafe. What's worse, we know some students are even being physically and emotionally harmed. Community leaders and parents shared that it is time for the state to act. I agree. Every day, children in Iowa schools are tormented by bullies. Bullies attack at school and on the internet. They lurk not just in the corners of the schoolhouse, but also on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Yik Yak, and through text messaging. Iowa common sense tells us that every child in Iowa deserves to go to school each and every day in a safe and respectful learning environment. They deserve a classroom and a community that allows them to grow and flourish, not live in fear of when the bully will strike again. This is the year that we stand up to the bully. We can't wait any longer. Please join Lieutenant Governor Reynolds, my wife Chris, and me in standing up against bullying. Together we can end bullying in Iowa. Together we can protect our students at our schools from bullies. The Bully Free Act of 2015 that I propose today gives parents more information by requiring parental notification. However, I'm also proposing an extra layer of protection for students. This year's anti-bullying legislation allows an exception from notification if a bullied student and a school official believe that parental notification could lead to abuse, neglect, or rejection. Legislation also launches a bullying prevention program by empowering student mentors to take ownership of anti-bullying efforts in their schools. The bill allows a student who changes schools due to bullying to immediately participate in athletics. The legislation will also provide investigator training for schools. Together, we can make 2015 the year that Iowa acted to protect our children and grandchildren by ending bullying in our schools. Moving Iowa forward also means ensuring our schools and communities stay safe and our families feel protected. It means we must do more to protect victims of domestic abuse. Now, domestic abusers can serve only a fraction of their sentence and return to demonizing their victims. This is wrong. It is wrong for the victims, and it's the wrong policy for the safety and well-being of Iowans. Let's work together to pass additional measures ensuring that victims do not live in fear of their abuser returning from prison long before the sentence is completed. Today, I propose legislation classifying anyone convicted of domestic abuse three times as a habitual offender. This classification would triple the mandatory minimum sentence. The legislation holds criminals accountable for their abuse, allows them ample time to rehabilitate, and protects our communities. While victims and communities will be protected from habitual offenders, together we can protect vulnerable Iowans from individuals making criminal threats. Oftentimes, Iowa courts order a threatening individual to stay away from a potential victim, but should the order be violated, the victim and the authorities are not notified until after the fact, and sometimes that's too late. Together, we can give authorities and the victims the power of knowing when an abuser is in close proximity. Together, we can enact legislation that expands the use of GPS monitoring on dangerous domestic abusers. Together we can protect victims of domestic violence. Together we can end bullying in Iowa. We know our budget is sound and that our books are balanced. We've done this together. We've passed historic tax relief, aiding Main Street businesses, and we've passed measures to increase the skills of Iowa workers. Those measures help attract great companies, creating high-quality careers to Iowa all over our state. Facebook just finished its first Iowa data center in Altoona and is already working on an expansion. Google is growing in Council Bluffs again, and Microsoft is expanding in West Des Moines. Cargill and CJ just opened in Fort Dodge and are bringing even more good jobs to the region. In Sioux City, CF Industries will be expanding production of nitrogen fertilizer for Iowa farmers. The Iowa fertilizer plant under construction in Lee County will produce both nitrogen fertilizer and DEF to reduce pollution and increase mileage for diesel engines. Valent Biosciences, Kenzie, Kemmen, Sabre, Brownells, and Mid-America's Historic Wind Project are all growing right here in Iowa. Across our state, though, farming operations still provide the lifeblood of our economy. This continued success depends, and their continued success depends on their ability to connect. Not only to connect their equipment to the ground, but in this day and age, it means connecting their equipment to the internet, connecting with the global marketplace to sell their goods, connecting to main streets across Iowa. The fabric of our state is woven together by the gravel roads and interstate highways. But in this day and age, it must also be connected through access to broadband as well. This legislative session, let's come together and pass legislation allowing rural Iowa to experience continued growth and connection to the rest of Iowa and the rest of the world. Together, let's put partisan politics aside and give rural Iowa the broadband legislation that connects every acre and connects communities to the careers of the 21st century. Our Connect Every Acre plan focuses on providing more broadband in rural Iowa and encourages service providers to build out networks, not just to the ending point, but to the rural communities in between, between Davenport and Des Moines, between Mason City and Sioux City, and all across Iowa. We are enriched by many fine rural communities. Let's weave them together with the fiber of high-speed internet connecting every acre and covering our state with broadband internet. We can accomplish this together by focusing on increasing access through reasonable regulation and encouraging growth, and by fostering expansion by creating the Iowa Farms, Schools, and Communities Broadband Grant Program. Adopting these measures demonstrates an ongoing commitment to our state's continued growth. With some of the most fertile land in the world, citizens with exceptional work ethic and a strong sense of community pride, rural Iowa has boundless opportunities. Together, we can adopt measures to connect every acre and give them yet another reason to believe their best days are ahead. Building a better Iowa means building Iowa for the future. It means investing in our state's infrastructure. So let's invest in broadband internet, and let's also invest in Iowa's roads and bridges. Over the past few years, rhetoric has trumpeted results when it comes to action on infrastructure funding for Iowa. A recently completed Battelle study demonstrates the need for us to take a hard look at adequate road funding. The study shows that without action, funding available for road and bridge maintenance will fall short of what is needed to remain competitive and, most importantly, safe. Without action, Iowa's roads and bridges face an uncertain future. Our farmers will find it more difficult to deliver their commodities to market. Business and industry will look elsewhere when considering where to invest and grow. As the study found, sound infrastructure remains a prerequisite for economic development. This is our opportunity to pave the road to Iowa's strong future. Together, we can find common ground and pass a bipartisan plan to fund the systems critical to our state's vitality, Iowa's roads and bridges, and our broadband infrastructure. Building an infrastructure as strong as the future that we want Iowa must be a bipartisan priority this legislative session. I'm confident we can find a solution together. We Iowans always do. Iowans' exceptional work ethic, commitment, and dedication are recognized across the country and around the world. Yet within our state today, skilled job openings are abundantly available and going unfilled. Last October, I toured Omaha Standard Palfinger in Council Bluffs. They are an international company that produces hoists, service cranes, and lift gates, and more. The Council Bluffs manufacturing facility was buzzing on the day I visited. Production floor was filled with welders and machinists. I saw their passion for their trade and their commitment to a superior product. For years, lift gates and service cranes have been produced overseas. Now they're being manufactured in America. They're being produced in Council Bluffs, Iowa. After our tour, company leaders shared with me they are eager to hire more workers in Council Bluffs if only they could find those that had the right skills. These are long-term, high-paying careers for Iowans, and they should not be left open. Together, we can establish the Center for Human Capital Enrichment, a public-private partnership dedicated to aligning education and job training program for workers. With a stronger workforce in place, we'll bring more manufacturing and high-skilled jobs to our state. Let's lift up the Iowa worker. We can help companies like Omaha Standard Palfinger, who are ready to expand and fill more jobs in the state of Iowa. Our state budget is tight. That is no secret. Iowans rightly expect predictability and stability in state government, but they also expect our state budget to reflect their priorities. The biennial budget that I propose today is balanced, works within our five-year projections, and still freezes tuition for Iowa students at our state universities for the third straight year. Freezing tuition for the third consecutive years is a bold step to provide an affordable higher education in Iowa, but our path doesn't end there. That's why we challenged the State Board of Regents to develop a plan that offers students a set of degrees that they can earn for $10,000. In addition, I'm offering legislation to create the Iowa Student Debt Reorganization Tax Credit. This tax credit allows individuals to volunteer for worthy causes in exchange for having contributions made toward their student debt. We've worked together to freeze tuition. Now let's continue to take the right steps to make Iowa a leader in reducing student debt. Iowans rightly expect high quality for the money they spend on education, as well as a government that reflects their shared values. Together, we work to increase transparency in government, making it as open and honest as the people of our great state. We created the Iowa Public Information Board to give the public a resource when seeking information from local and state government. I'm pleased to report that the Iowa Public Information Board has responded to 643 cases in the past fiscal year. More and more, the inquiries are not complaints, but rather questions from policymakers about how they can be more transparent. The Iowa Public Information Board is making every layer of government more open. This year, I'm recommending that Iowa establish a government accountability portal, a one-stop shop for citizens seeking information. The portal, housed within the Public Information Board, will field requests and respond within one business day. As state employees, we are here to serve the taxpayers. Iowa can do more to improve government transparency. For many years, the people of Iowa who fund state government have been kept in the dark on personnel decisions because of a loophole in Iowa's open records law. I was pleased last year when the House of Representatives passed on a bipartisan basis legislation that would shine light on these personnel files. A substantiated offense while a government employee is being paid by the taxpayers should not be hidden in the shadows. Together, in the best interest of Iowa taxpayers, we can shine light on these records and make our state government even more open, honest, and transparent. As I travel the state, I marvel at the endless beauty of our landscape. When I visit all 99 counties, I never cease to be amazed at what local communities are doing to continually improve on their main streets and quality of life. From the High Trestle Trail Bridge near Madrid to the revitalization of downtown Cedar Rapids, from the Lewis and Clark Estate Park near the banks of the Missouri River to the historic Millwork District in Dubuque near the Mississippi River, our land between two rivers offers our citizens a high quality of life and our visitors many attractions. But as Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and I continue to work to bring more business and industry to our state, we hear that companies are interested not only in our welcoming business climate, but also in a high quality of life for their employees. This year, I'm proposing Iowa Next, a holistic plan for quality of life initiatives across the state. Let's bring together state agencies that have a shared interest in quality of life initiatives and invest in our parks, trails, lakes, and museums. The proposals outlined today will impact every Iowan. They will help to create jobs, protect students and families, and open up our government. Like the old saying goes, many hands make light work. Remember back in June of last year, torrential rains pummeled northwest Iowa. In the Sioux County town of Rock Valley, the Rock River surged over its banks and into the streets and homes of residents. A few short weeks before Ragbri, citizens and community leaders were wondering if they'd be able to recover. When I arrived in Rock Valley, I had little doubt. In a town of just 3,500 people, 1,700 people showed up to help sandbag. Members of the town helped evacuate a local assisted living home. Emergency managers stayed up throughout the night to ensure the safety and well-being of locals, their homes, and the town's infrastructure. And when the cycles of Ragbri from around the globe arrived in Rock Valley, the city was ready because they worked together. When a challenge arrives, we Iowans get to work. We know that by working together, we can find a solution to any problem. The 86th General Assembly is upon us. With it comes an opportunity. Working together and moving forward is the Iowa way. Let's come together again and make our schools stronger and safer, our communities more connected, our families better protected, our workers better trained, our universities more affordable, and our government the most transparent in the United States. Now's the time to get to work. Now's the time to get to work. Together, we can build a better Iowa. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless all the people of the great state of Iowa. Thank you very much.
We've been listening to Governor Terry Branstad deliver his 2015 Condition of the State Address on Iowa Public Radio. Thanks to Iowa Public Television for helping us with this broadcast. I'm Charity Nebbe, and now we're going to talk about what we heard on the speech. Joining me now for analysis, Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we would love to hear from you as well. Let us know what you thought of the speech, things that you heard that were new, things that surprised you, things that you hoped to hear and did not hear. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So, Chris, let's start with first impressions. Is this the speech that you expected to hear today?
Yes, it was. I think it was, he covered the policy proposals that we've been hearing all along for the last couple of weeks. He didn't touch on a few things that I thought he might, but really, you know, this was centered around the Bullying Free Act of 2015, the roads and bridges funding, as well as rural broadband. Those were kind of the three issues that we thought we'd hear about, and those were the ones that we saw or heard from today. I think, you know, thinking about these condition of the state speeches generally, what scholarship shows is that successful governors are those who have very simple speeches, very clear, with a few direct initiatives, and they don't try to overreach or overpromise. And I think that's what we heard from Governor Branstad today.
Of course, the governor spent quite a bit of time at the beginning of the speech and throughout the speech focusing on successes in Iowa, and jobs and the economy seem to be his primary focus there.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the governor's prerogative, and that's his advantage. He can come out and do a lot of credit claiming, which is what governors generally do. You know, he's basically starting the process in terms of the legislative year. He can focus on governing. He's relatively still a very popular governor. He's experienced. And so those are all advantages that you would expect a governor to take with or to utilize during a condition of the state address.
I was struck by the fact that he used the term together. Mm-hmm. A lot. That was a word we heard very, very frequently, especially in about the first half of the state or in the first half of the speech. What can we read from that?
Well, I was struck by it, too, because I was trying to recall the together part of it from the last couple of sessions, because we've seen, you know, throughout the last few years where you have a proposal that starts in the Iowa House and then dies in the Senate or vice versa. And so, you know, I think he's trying to emphasize bipartisanship going forward. Certainly the big three proposals that he talked about as far as rural broadband, roads and bridges, and the Bully Free Act, you would expect bipartisan support there. So I think that's where that togetherness was coming from.
Clay Masters now joins us, Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters. Hello, Clay.
Hello, Clay.
Good morning, Charity.
Well, Clay, give me your response to the speech today. Was this the speech you were expecting to hear?
It really was the speech that I was expecting to hear. As Chris Larimer mentioned just a moment ago, I believe the slogan from the 2014 Condition of the State speech was "Iowa is working," and it felt much more like a campaign speech. This year, though, it's "The Condition of Iowa is Strong" were some of his opening comments, and a lot of it mirrored what he talked to me about yesterday. I sat down with the governor for about a 20-minute interview that aired. Part of it aired this morning on Morning Edition. And most of what he told me was in the speech this morning. There were a few surprises to me, one of which was he was talking about increasing mandatory sentences for domestic abusers. That's something that he hasn't talked about a lot. He might have mentioned it here and there on the campaign trail. Another one was this Iowa Next initiative, quality of life enhancement for investing in parks, trails, lakes, and museums. That was another surprise to me.
Chris, any surprises, Chris, any surprises for you?
Well, I think the surprising were a couple of things that were left out, I guess. You know, there was no talk about the school's calendars. There was no mention of the, at least as I heard, the supplemental school aid funding formula, nothing about minimum wage, which you really wouldn't expect, but then, as well as nothing about medical marijuana. So I was a bit surprised some of those issues were left out of the speech.
And Clay brought up the domestic abuse mm-hmm. initiative. And as Clay mentioned, that was something that we heard a little bit of during the campaign season. But this was very concrete, and it wasn't something that was reported ahead of time, talking about harsher punishments, GPS tracking, et cetera. Was that a surprise to you?
It was, but, you know, he tied it into kind of the Bully Free Act of 2015. So, again, I think he's kind of trying to group all of that together in terms of reducing domestic abuse and domestic violence. And I would expect, again, as with some of the other proposals, that you would see more bipartisan support than on other things.
We will get to the phones in just a moment. If you'd like to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Chris, back to his use of the word together. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of these initiatives are going to take bipartisan support because we have divided state government in Iowa. He's also recycling some of the things that did not work for him last year. So the bullying initiative of 2015, we couldn't get bullying legislation passed last year. What's different this year?
Well, you know, we'll just have to see. You know, he mentioned this year he's talking more about parental notification, that parents are going to have more information, but that then there's also going to be an escape clause or an excuse clause there where if there's a concern about that parental notification leading to abuse at home, that then the school officials do not have to inform the parents. And that was a sticking point last year, I think, in the Iowa House, where about who would be informed about bullying and the extent to which parents and school administrators would have to take an active role. So, you know, maybe we'll see that going forward or move a little bit further this session. You know, he also talked about Connect Every Iowan last year. Now it's Connect Every Acre. So, you know, this again,
it's got a new name.
Right. It's got a new name. And we'll see if it gets any more traction this year. You know, we have President Obama coming into town tomorrow to talk about broadband access. Maybe that will kind of help push the proposal a little bit.
Right. And he's going to Cedar Falls because the Cedar Falls Utilities is one of the nation's leaders in broadband connectivity for the entire community. And they've reached out to rural areas as well. So you feel that effort may get a little more bipartisan support?
I think you'll see it move a little bit more. I mean, we're not, you know, I don't want to always talk politics, but, you know, we're not in an election year, so I would expect to see it move a little bit more. I think the agenda's been set. We talked about it for one session. I would expect to see more action on it this session.
Clay, I want to get your response on the Connect Every Acre plan as opposed to the Connect Every Iowa plan that we heard so much about last year. What do you think is different?
I think this year he's, at least the tone that he was taking today was a lot about just the needs of farmers, a much more rural hue to how he's been addressing. So he talks a lot about precision agriculture, which is a way for farmers to really pinpoint where they need to apply fertilizer when they're, working in the field, so they can manage their budget of how much they're spending to know exactly where they need to pinpoint. This takes the internet to do that. So more access to that. And in a roundabout way, he's kind of addressing a water quality issue in the state. Just last week, the Des Moines Water Works Board sued some rural Iowa counties because of nitrates that were being sent down the river. And then Des Moines Water Works is having to denitrificate, so the water quality is, you know, they can put it in the sinks of people in Des Moines and the area. Governor Branstad thinks that the lawsuit is a mistake, but talking about, you know, increasing the amount of skills that the farmers have for putting fertilizer on their fields is, you know, in a roundabout way, addressing water quality issues in the state. So, you know, I think by talking about that too, he's, you know, being more friendly to the agriculture community too.
Let's go to the phones. Cheryl is on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Cheryl.
Good morning, Charity. I enjoyed Governor Branstad's speech, and that surprised me because I am not a supporter of Governor Branstad. However, I enjoyed what he had to say about increasing the economy and education and those other items he addressed. What he did not address, and they, you were talking about, was the quality of water. That has upset me because voluntary application or non-application hasn't been working here of nitrates. And I think that it's a pressing issue. The air we breathe, the water we drink is as important, and actually it's vitally important to Iowa. And it's not being addressed by Governor Branstad.
Cheryl, thank you so much for your comment. And Clay, what did other legislative leaders say about water quality yesterday?
Well, yesterday, well, first of all, Governor Branstad, when asked directly, do we have a water crisis in the state, which is what's being said from the Des Moines Water Works, Governor Branstad's answer was pretty simple. No, there is no water quality crisis in the state. Bill Stowe, who's the director of or the general manager of Des Moines Water Works, has said, you know, we've been having 15 years of conversations about cleaning up Iowa's water. And he's said that it's, you know, evident by the statistics that we have that it, the conversation isn't going anywhere. So they see a lawsuit as being what needed to happen. Now, yesterday during River to River at noon, we had both a Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl and House Majority Leader Linda Uppmeyer. Gronstahl's a Democrat. Uppmeyer's a Republican. And both of them seem to kind of shy away from thinking a lawsuit was the best idea here. So, you know, leaders, they'll – the governor has also said that he's going to address, you know, water quality issues by providing more money for these initiatives to clean up the water and to have more – you know, the rural broadband will help them plan what they're putting on their fields. But, you know, I from the tone, from the way that both the leaders took it and the way that the governor's been talking about it, I don't see the in this session there's going to be anything big that we'll be talking about that will at least please the Des Moines Water Works.
Right. And we should clarify, we're talking about voluntary initiatives. The governor is not in favor of penalties or that
correct.
Kind of oversight.
Correct.
Chris, is there increased pressure from the federal government to look at our water quality in the state of Iowa?
Well, there is a bit. I mean, we've seen the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, come out with several statements talking about water quality in the state of Iowa. But again, you know, I think I would agree with Clay that I'd be surprised to see much movement on this in this legislative session, you know, for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's hard to predict how the partisan politics will play out, and I think that makes it hard for legislative leaders to think about the process of moving a water quality bill through the legislature. And I think for a lot of Iowans, I'm not sure that they see water quality as the most pressing issue facing the state. It, you know, it's not talked about. It's not always in the headlines. I mean, it pops up, as was mentioned, over the last several years, but I don't think it's to the point, if it's not a crisis, if it's not getting headlines, it's not becoming a sort of a focusing event as policy scholars talk about, I don't see it as something that Iowans are going to demand action on right at the moment.
Now, there was a celebration of a successful tax cut in the state of Iowa and a number of the initiatives that were talked about during the speech today. We did not hear a conversation about funding for these initiatives. Iowa Next is something that was brought up at the end of the speech, quote, a holistic plan for quality of life initiatives across the state, state agencies coming together to invest in parks, trails, lakes, and museums. Last year, the governor vetoed some REAP funding that could have been used for parks, trails, et cetera. is there an issue here? I mean, where does funding for this come from? Is this initiative in conflict with some past policies? Clay?
You know, we'll wait to see what the actual budget shows. I would imagine it looks like I just saw a tweet from the governor that the governor's full budget in brief can be viewed here. So I haven't had a chance to pore over that.
Right, we'll look at that at 11.
Right. Right. Both parties have said there's not a lot of slack in the budget in this legislative session. So I think, you know, there might be talk about it and there might be ideas that come out of this. But whether or not a lot of these things get checked off the list, you know, I think it'll be a lot of fodder here to talk about. But yeah, as you say, the budget's tight, and so we'll really have to just see how this goes. And you mentioned the REAP funding. I mean, there was $11.2 million in ballpark there that was vetoed for those that funding that could shore up some environmental concerns. You had the Secretary of Agriculture who on Friday, when he vetoed that money, you know, was showing some disappointment there. So yeah, it's something that's ongoing there, and there are a lot of initiatives here, but we'll just have to pore over this tweet, I suppose.
All right. Pete is on the line now from West Des Moines. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Good. Oh, it's interesting. I'm an old speechwriter. I did 3 conditions of the state for a governor, and I can't help but think that early this morning, there were people, including the governor, lieutenant governor, poring over every word to try and add in some things, but also to make sure that the governor didn't add anything that hadn't been vetted or prepared. And it's just an interesting dynamic in that, of course, there's a few things that he needs to do here. And one is, you know, set the pace of the session or the year, or at least the perception of his role in it. Number two, you know, do no harm to anything he's working on or try and preempt anybody from doing so. And then the third thing, which you hear repeatedly for any governor in any state, is take credit for any possible thing that he can. And in that, I think I don't think he could have really given a different speech than the one he did. Knowing that, the temptation for any governor in a sitting like that is to say everything, say it again, and the writers and anybody, the reporters, you know, notice that it walks up to the line of trying to do a little too much with a speech, because you want to hit every base and you recognize you've got a statewide audience. And so for that, it's just another interesting thing to listen to. And it's very consistent with anything that you would expect from this governor.
Well, Pete, I want to ask you, I'm sorry, Clay, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I would say that, and the governor has the benefit, too, to talk about a lot of these things. But with a split legislature, if something doesn't go right, if an initiative doesn't get passed, you know, he can say, well, we tried, and the Senate Democrats didn't take it up, you know. So he has the benefit of a split legislature in that sense.
Well, Pete, before I let you go, and I want to get Clay's take on this and Chris's take on this as well, Governor Branstad is in a unique position. This is his 20th condition of the state address. Here is a man who was reelected with very little effort. He's been in office a very long time, at least if you put both of his sessions together. He has a tremendous amount of political capital, but he didn't really push that in this speech. Were you surprised that he isn't a little more forward in spending some of that political capital?
You know, in some respects, I have to think so. But, you know, the other angle is he spent it leading up to 15. He spent it to get here. And so insofar as he didn't have to spend a lot of personal effort to get reelected, at the end of the day, there's nobody in Iowa whose mind could change about Governor Branstad. They've got a perception of him. It tends to be favorable, and more people voted for him on a couple of occasions. But the question of that is it plausible? If all of a sudden Governor Branstad was, you know, Branstad 3.0 instead of 2.0, would it be plausible? And so I think in this respect, his instinct was to do what people know and to offer up an image of slow and steady. And I think that's the only thing he could have done. If you listen to an activist governor at this time around, people would hear him and think, who is this guy? This isn't who we voted for 6 times.
All right, Pete, thanks so much for calling. Clay?
And something that speaks to what Pete has said, one of the biggest surprises for me was I walked into the Capitol Rotunda and it was quiet. There weren't the protesters that, you know, I've been here since 2012, and so I anticipated Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement to be lining the halls, and I thought, well, maybe they've just kind of given up because he just keeps getting reelected.
Chris?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Pete's absolutely right. I mean, why use the political capital now if he has it? Why not save it for next year or 2 years down the road? You know, he did what you would expect a governor to do. He took credit for a lot of things, started off the speech by doing that, and then laid out very simple, direct proposals that, you know, he's probably not going to be seen as overreaching or overpromising, and so he's going to continue to be viewed as having a lot of political capital and not creating a lot of controversy for the time being.
Before we run out of time today, I want to talk about his focus on infrastructure in Iowa. Now, we mentioned that he's focusing on connectivity. He's linking that kind of connectivity with physical infrastructure in the state, but he's talking about investing in Iowa's roads and bridges. Something that was missing from that part of the speech was funding for infrastructure. Clay, when you talked to him on Morning Edition this morning, you asked about a gas tax, and he deftly sidestepped that question. What are we supposed to read from that?
Well, I remember two sessions ago, the governor was talking a lot about a gas tax, but he wasn't calling it a gas tax. He was calling it a user fee, so that people that are, you know, using the gas are paying for it, you know, trying to disguise it as something else. And he wouldn't say, you're right, he wouldn't say a gas tax, but he's saying that
right,
there
and
are
a
different...
A gas tax increase, I should clarify that, right?
Sure, yes, an increase to the gas tax. But there are other methods, he says, you know, in his Monday morning press briefing, he was talking about how there's been a lot of candid conversations, which is apparently Republican speak for things are going well, for finding a common ground on what, you know, various members of the caucus would feel in the Republican caucus for, you know, introducing something. What that looks like, I'm not quite sure yet. And there are some methods out there that we don't have time to get into before the show runs out.
Chris, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you know, I'm not surprised there's not a lot of talk about the funding on that. I think this is something he's going to leave to the State House and the State Senate to hash out. I mean, this is obviously going to be controversial. There hasn't been action on it, even though the DOT has asked for action on it. So I think he's politically smart just to stay removed from some of the funding details there.
So we are going to see a number of the issues that were big issues last year. We're going to see them talked about in the state legislature again this year. What are you most interested to see as the legislative session begins and all of the political wrangling begins again? Clay?
I mean, one of the biggest things for many people in the media that really got coverage last year was medical marijuana that was a cannabis oil that parents that have children with epilepsy could use to you know, take care of their children. They are back on the state house floor lobbying again this year to try to make that more accessible. So I'll be interested to see if that gets any traction. The governor, of course, didn't bring it up today during the condition of the state speech. And, you know, he kind of sidestepped the conversation a little bit this morning and saying that, you know, we're going to listen to what these parents have to say. But at the same time also was talking about what's happening with attorneys general in Nebraska and Oklahoma, where they're trying to get the U.S. Supreme Court to take a reversal of the Colorado's recreational marijuana. You know, he kept referring to that as, you know, the unintended consequences that can happen from that. So with all of those unintended consequences, I can't, you know, I'll be interested to see what happens with that.
All right. And Chris, what about you? What are you looking for this year?
Well, I think just to see if there's any movement on some of these things that were talked about last year with the Bully Free Act, the broadband access, and then if, you know, something actually does get done on infrastructure, is this going to be a year where they actually make big policy changes? And then as Clay mentioned, you know, what are the surprises? You know, nobody thought about medical marijuana prior to the 2014 legislative session. Are there going to be any sort of legislative surprises come May?
And there seems to be a focus on government transparency. So maybe we'll find out more about it this year.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, Chris Larimer, thank you so much for being here today.
Of course, thank you.
Chris Larimer, political scientist at the University of Northern Iowa. Clay, thank you.
Thanks, Charity. Good to talk to you.
Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters, of course, will continue to report on new developments in the 2015 legislative session. Today, we were listening to Governor Terry Branstad's 20th condition of the state address, and followed by analysis with Clay Masters and Chris Larimer. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.